Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup podcast. My name is Joe Glover. Today our guest is the amazing Sophie Cross, the editor of Freelancer magazine. At the end of 2020, Sophie had a dream, and over the past year she's been bringing it together. In this talk she shared how, not only using some very smart, practical marketing thinking, but also hard work and community. It was a really phenomenal talk, one of my favourites of all time. I've got so much admiration for Sophie, and I know that you're going to love her too. So, if you're up for an honest, transparent, well thought through, smart talk, then take this opportunity to sit down, listen, and enjoy. Before we get going, I just want to say a big thank you to our sponsors for this week, our featured sponsor for this week, who are Fiverr. Very fittingly for Sophie's talk, then Fiverr are all about bringing freelancers and buyers together in over 300 different categories. And I know that that sounds like a lot, but certainly for the Marketing Meetup, then we have benefited an awful lot from using some absolutely phenomenal freelancers on Fiverr. If you head to the Marketing Meetup website and click on our Fiverr link right there, you'll be taken through to a page which shows you all the different freelancers that we've used from Fiverr over the course of time. With all that said, it's now time to pass over to the very talented, very wonderful Sophie Cross, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. I know that I did, and I know that the community did too. Take care.
Okay, good?
Good, we're good.
Okay, so enough gushing. Actually, there's probably going to be quite a bit more gushing because this might be the first ever marketing meetup gush instead of talk. And the reason for this is because this is a story of how I launched a business that I love, a magazine to be precise. But really, it's a story about people and how I owe it all to friendship and the power of community. And it's a story about marketing, you'll be glad to know. So I'm going to take you on. Yes, I am. I'm going to take you on the journey from the moment the Freelancer magazine popped into my head to today, where we're just on the verge of going to print with issue 3. We have readers in 20 countries and we have a third team member starting next week. So from the day I had the idea to today has been a grand total of 264 days. So please bear with me because I don't know everything yet. But I'm going to cover the idea conception, how we launched, how we make the mag, our business model and our marketing channels. And hopefully you can take things from it that you can apply to launching something, whether it's a business, a product, a service, a marketing campaign, an email newsletter, whatever you want to launch. I know that Joe is launching lots of things over the next few months. So, so to give you a little bit of background about me, I've been a marketer for about 16 years. The first 8 years I was employed as a marketing exec and then a marketing manager. So I worked in the travel and hospitality industry for companies like Hilton and Chessington World of Adventures. And then the last 8 years or so, I've been freelance as a marketer and copywriter. And I've been started to be known as the OG of freelancing, which I was not so secretly very pleased about until I realized that OG basically just means old, but I'm gonna roll with it anyway. So how the idea came about at this point, it would probably be helpful to know this about me. So I've spent about as long as I can remember coming up with business ideas, writing business plans, buying URLs, reading the startup books, and even actually starting a few things. So blogs, brands, businesses. And yes, these are all real, unfortunately. So basically, I've been trying to come up with a really good business idea and launch it my whole life. And then I did it by mistake, pretty much the only time I wasn't trying. So I think quite a lot about what was different this time, because to say that I did it by mistake isn't that useful when you're trying to help other people. And what I also sort of pops into my head quite a lot is how a lot of success stories tend to start with sob stories or disasters, which I totally get because they can be a real catalyst for change, and you know, it makes a great yarn to spin. But having a heart attack or having a breakdown or going bankrupt also isn't particularly actionable for other people. But to be honest, I've been dining out on my own mini sob story, and it goes like this. So I'd been living in the depths of the countryside, and I mean the depths of the countryside. So we were 1 hour from the nearest motorway, we were 2 hours from the nearest big city. And I was generally loving living a relaxed way of life, and I was enjoying working remotely for decent clients like the London Eye and lastminute.com. But after 6 years of living there, my husband and I both felt that our respective careers had started to plateau and we missed London life. So we decided to move back again. So we moved back at the beginning of 2020, and I was raring to go. I was going to get out there and meet people in person and make a name for myself as a freelance travel and hospitality marketer. And I had vague plans that I'd launch a marketing networking event for the travel and hospitality industry. And then within a month, I'd lost all of my client work to the pandemic. So I was in a bit of dire straits. That's Dire Straits, the band, by the way, if people aren't as much of an OG as me, or sorry for the non-UK based people as well. I'm not sure how big Dire Straits were outside of the UK. But what I've realized is what happened next, which is the happy bit where I launched the magazine, wasn't down to this disaster. That wasn't my catalyst for success. What had changed for me was that I'd become an active part of communities, and I'd become a bigger part of them as I had more time on my hands. So I wasn't sitting there on my own, racking my brains for a new idea or scraping around for clients. I was getting involved, say, like mainly in communities on Twitter, on Slack, on LinkedIn, and I was trying to be helpful. So I realized that freelance life, even freelance life with hardly any clients, didn't have to be solitary. I'd found my tribe. And actually, I'd found more than one tribe. So I went from being a serial business plan writer and URL buyer to a serial community member. I was learning, I was being supported, I was sharing knowledge, I was contributing, I was feeling valued, I was having fun, and I was making friends. And it made me think about what I could create to help more people. And I decided to put my marketing knowledge into making online courses. So I launched 2 free short courses and 2 paid courses using the platform Thinkific. And the response to them was really good. Like people were actually doing them and completing them. And they were telling me that they were making a real difference to their business, which obviously made me feel great. And these people were largely freelancers because those were the communities that I was part of, and those are the communities that I was talking about them in. So then my mind is 100% focused on how I create content that's helpful for freelancers. So I'm thinking about what other courses are going to be most useful. And I'm listening, and I mean, I'm really listening. So I wasn't just listening to the things that felt relevant or resonated with me, but to everything. So if there was an event on the topic that I already knew about, I'm attending because I want to know what questions people are asking. I'm looking for the knowledge gaps that I can fill, and I'm learning more the whole time. And I'm realizing that rants, moans, grumbles, all these things that people are having are actually an opportunity to solve a problem. And that if things feel boring or samey, that's an opportunity to do something different. You've got to ask yourself, like, why is it so boring? How could it be not boring? And you can apply this process to coming up with an idea for anything. So maybe you want to write a book, or you want to come up with an idea for a blog post, or create a course, or launch an event. One, be part of the community you want to create something for, or at least hang out where your target audience is in a non-creepy way. 2, listen. Really, really listen. 3, pay particular attention to the problems and the moaning and the things that you find boring. I just want to say as well, if you're sort of an already established business, there's a huge opportunity here for customer feedback. So many businesses either don't proactively encourage honest feedback, or they ignore it, or by the way they measure the results, they incentivize their teams to manipulate what's collected. But actually, open feedback is the easiest way for you to find these problems. And, you know, finding out the way that the changes that your customers want is the simplest way to get relevant ideas and to make improvements to your business. So anyway, I'm hanging out in these freelance communities and I'm listening and I'm wondering what channels would work best alongside the courses and how else I could be creating content. Maybe I should make a blog or a podcast. What would people actually read or consume, and what would really stand out online amongst everything that's out there already? So I'm looking for a contradiction. And then it hits me. What would really stand out isn't online, it's offline. It's print, it's post, it's a glossy magazine, a magazine dedicated to freelancers. And I know that one doesn't exist already because I would have heard about it in all the freelance communities that I'm in. And all of a sudden, in trying to think about how to create the best content that will help people, I've actually come up with a great standalone business idea. But there's no value in having ideas. There's only value in implementing them. So onto the launch. So you know what happens next. I'm URL shopping again, which was just as well as 123 Reg was starting to get a little bit worried about my absence. And freelancermagazine.co.uk is available. So now it's time to start telling people about the idea. Within 48 hours of having the idea, I'd asked Ange, our designer, if she'd be involved. I'd got a basic website live, and I just happened to be asked on my first ever podcast, the Freelance Heroes podcast. So I thought, I've got to talk about it on there. I think the temptation is to keep an idea a secret until you've got a bit further with it. But this is the perfect time to involve people because they're not expecting you to have it all worked out. And I wanted to get people in the freelance community on board as early as possible to ask their opinions, to hear their feedback, to get their ideas, to find out any obvious reservations and to make other people part of it too. So, you know, the earlier you get people involved, the more likely they're going to be ambassadors for your brand. So don't keep your ideas a secret. So if there's a reason that it isn't feasible, you want to find out sooner rather than later. And if you're not quite ready to announce it on your socials or on a podcast, float it with a few friends or clients or customers, and telling people what you're planning to do also really puts a rocket up your ass to get on with it. So I knew I wanted to launch via Kickstarter. And I wanted to do that because I really wanted to validate a product market fit. I wanted to find out that people really did want it before we made the magazine. And I thought Kickstarter would be a great way to do this. And just in case some people don't know, Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform where you can upload all your info, all the info about your creative project. You set a goal amount that you want to raise, and then you create rewards that backers can choose to buy to support the project. But it's all or nothing. So if you don't reach your target amount in the campaign time that you set, which can be anything from 1 to 60 days, you don't get any of the money. So just, I wanted to add a quick side note here about how you should define success for yourself and failure for yourself. So how to define this success for yourself? Any way you bloody well want to. Your definition of success shouldn't crush you. Learning is success. Trying something new is success. Having fun is success. So I decided that even if the Kickstarter didn't reach its target, it would be a success because I tried, and I would still know more about launching a Kickstarter than I would if I hadn't. And I'd also know why it had failed. And I didn't want to be making a magazine that people didn't want. So the fact that I'd let go of the outcome, that it would be a success even if it failed, I really feel like that let me go for it full throttle. So from day one, I felt so much positive energy and confidence because I was confident that I was going to succeed, because by the way I'd chosen to define success for myself, I couldn't not. So there's a quote I really like from Jean Cocteau. So it goes, there's a kind of success worse than failure. So I'm not sure what Jean meant by this quote when he wrote it in Paris in the early 1900s, but it's always struck a chord with me. So to me, it means always playing it safe, never pushing yourself, never giving yourself the chance to fail. Okay. Back to the launch. So I'm going to talk quite a lot about Kickstarter now, but bear in mind that all the tactics that are used on the Kickstarter platform can be applied to your marketing, whichever channels you're using. So I believe there are some absolute marketing and business fundamentals required to successfully launch something. And the great thing about Kickstarter is it forces you to tick these boxes. So especially with if you're wanting to launch like a community-centric business or a creative business. But like I said, whether you're launching something via Kickstarter or not, I would recommend you have all of these boxes ticked. So my marketing launch checklist, I'm going to go through these a little bit more in a second, but prove a product market fit first, get a firm grip on your costs, budgets, and pricing, have a plan, a pre-launch plan, a plan B, and a party, get the community involved, create a sense of urgency, build momentum, and get social. So proving a product market fit. So I use Kickstarter to launch the product and to prove the product market fit at the same time. And you can do that because of its all or nothing nature. So the only rewards I chose to sell through the Kickstarter were copies of 1 to 4 of the magazine and advertising space. So I really wanted to ensure that backers really wanted the magazine. And if I hit the target, I promised to make issues 1 to 4. And because I was selling the magazine by the Kickstarter, I had to give people as much information about it as possible. So marketing is about conveying as much as you can about the thing, all the benefits of the thing, creating excitement and desire for the thing without actually giving them the thing. So Ange created spread mockups, and I invested in getting a professional video made about it, and I told people everything they could expect. So from who it was for, why they should want it, the features list, the themes, the number of pages it would have, the size, the shape, even the thickness of the paper. I might have kept a couple of things up my sleeve, but pretty much everything. And I can't stress this enough from, you know, personal experience, that however you do it, make sure people want it before you spend lots of time and money building it. So whether that's by doing some research, asking people to register their interest, or making a basic beta version or a minimum viable product, when you're launching something, your MVP is your MVP. So your minimum viable product is your most valuable player. So the Kickstarter campaign was my version of a minimum viable product. And it allowed people to see it and buy it before I committed to making it. Okay, so 2 is get a firm grip on your cost, budget, and pricing. So because you have to set a target amount on your Kickstarter, it forces you to think very carefully about how much money you need to make, which is something we should all be doing the whole time, but probably don't. So in Kickstarter, if you set your target too high, you risk not hitting the target and you get nothing. If you set it too low, you risk not covering your costs and also losing the momentum for the campaign if you reach the target too soon. With magazines and print in particular, there are lots and lots of variables. So you have to print a minimum quantity. The more you print, the more your cost per unit comes down. So in theory, I could have hit the target amount and been obliged to make issues 1 to 4, but only have sold copies of issue 1. So it's impossible to know for sure when you're budgeting and forecasting. There's a lot of guesswork, but it's better to make best guesses than make no guesses at all or set no targets at all for your business. So I always start by working out the worst case scenario. And also when you're working out how much to charge for something, do not come at your pricing strategy by thinking about how cheaply you can possibly make something for. Charge more and make it the best it can be. So whatever you charge, some people will think it's too cheap and some people are going to think it's too expensive. So I'd advise you to make it reassuringly expensive, as Stella Artois would say. So have a plan, a pre-launch plan, a plan B, and a party. So if you are going to launch something, launch it. And by that, I mean, put thought into it, write a launch plan. You can't just expect to post a few times about something and for it to take off. So whether it's a product, whether it's a newsletter. And some of the best advice I was given was to leave more time for a pre-launch period. So I wanted to get the Kickstarter going as soon as possible. But I pushed it back a month after everyone kept telling me how important that pre-launch was, which is the period when you're telling people about the launch campaign before it goes live. So for when the campaign was live, I'd created a plan B and I called it my tumbleweed plan. which was things I could talk about if I ran out of things to talk about. And I actually didn't end up using it that much, but it was really great to have it there as a backup. Okay, this next point is very important. If you have the opportunity to have a party, have a party. That is a motto for business and for life. So the party gave me loads more to talk about in the pre-launch period. I was giving people a reason to get excited and to get involved. And it's scientifically proven that first impressions really do count for products and for brands. And you only have one chance to make a first impression. So I wanted to set the tone for the campaign and for the magazine, to launch with a bang, to bring people together with positivity and celebration and fun. And it doesn't have to be expensive. So we had an online party live streamed on Twitch. It had to be online because we were in lockdown at the time, but regardless, it worked so much better than in person could have done because it was accessible and everyone could join. Okay, get the community involved. Get the community or your target audience involved as early as possible. The party was brilliant for this, but even before we announced the party, we asked people to vote on the branding and the cover design for issue one, which also allowed us to start building our email database. I know AJ, if she's here, is going to love this point. I think she is. So create a direct relationship with your customers, but remember, you talking at your audience doesn't make it a community. You having a two-way dialogue with your customers doesn't make it a community. For it to be a community, you need to facilitate connecting the people within it to each other. Okay, create a sense of urgency. Give people incentive to get involved early. These are your true fans and they should be rewarded for getting on board first, and they'll also help to get the ball rolling. And give people a deadline to get involved at all and stick to it. So if you don't give a deadline, most people will do it tomorrow and tomorrow never comes. So Kickstarter is all about the countdown and creating that sense of urgency. So if people want it, they have a window in which to do it. And if they're going to share it with their networks, they will also do it in that time frame too, which helps build the momentum, which is the penultimate point on the checklist. Build momentum, be fired up and ready to go. People will feed directly off the energy you bring. They need to feel your confidence and commitment before they can give you theirs. So if your marketing communications feel a bit flat, they're going to be ignored. If you're not excited about it, you can't expect other people to be. Your marketing is the only thing people have to go on to make a decision whether they're going to buy into you, your brand, your product, your service. It's a direct reflection, and it was especially important for us because I wasn't only asking people to buy the magazine, I was asking them to buy advertising space, and I was also asking them to be featured in it. And because I was running the campaign on my own, it allowed me to be very fast paced and make decisions very quickly. So being a small team continues to allow us to be extremely creative and agile. So I hear a lot of freelancers say how hard it is to market themselves, which I totally get, and small businesses. But what if you reframe this? It's your business. It's your marketing. You don't need to ask anyone else's permission or wait for sign off. You can do whatever you damn well please. And this will also give you a competitive advantage. It will make you stand out, even though it feels scary at first. And I absolutely relish this creative freedom now. Last point on the checklist, get social. Got some old school cue cards here and I'm just waiting to drop them all. Okay, so a bit more on the marketing channels we use in a minute, but the social media has been pretty much everything for us. So during Kickstarter, I mainly used Twitter and I was on it a lot. So I was doing about 30 to 50 tweets a day. So it's a wonder I have any followers left at all, to be honest. But these included tweets, retweets, replies, and none of it was scheduled. So I was just putting out updates, being part of the conversation and thanking people for sharing. And so many people shared about it. So I inadvertently used positive social proof, not negative social proof. So this is the difference between saying, woohoo, we've got 180 backers. And the negative social proof would be, please follow us. We just need 20 more backers to get to 200. So the former keeps it positive and it makes people want to get involved instead of asking them to. And from the moment we had one follower on our Kickstarter page, so instead of being embarrassed about having only one follower, I celebrated it. So I was like, we've got our first follower. And I was like, we've got our 12th follower. And like from that moment, people were responding like, I'm follower number 13, I'm follower number 34. And it just went from there. And I put myself out there as the face of the brand because I knew that people prefer to talk to people rather than logos. And also I wanted to talk to them too. And still, yeah, continue to tweet 30 to 50 times a day. And I just wanted to make a note that, you know, it wasn't and it isn't always easy to post. So I think when, you know, you see people posting a lot, you can think that it's easy for other people, but it sometimes it is really uncomfortable. And I still, I normally press send or tweet or the post button with my eyes shut. Like I've posted things and I've deleted them straight away. And I, you know, but the more you do it, the easier it does become. And what makes it a bit easier is having things to talk about. So like the party, like the mugs we gave away, and like the teasers of our features. So I'd say don't rack your brains for what you're going to post about. Think about doing interesting things in real life in your business, and then posting will become easy. Okay, so what actually happened in the Kickstarter? These aren't in any particular order, but here's a top 10 we put together of all the highlights, which we celebrated at the closing party. Of course, we had a closing party too. And I shared these on Twitter at 20-minute intervals during the closing hours of that campaign because I just wanted to take that energy through to the final seconds. So I'm going to read this. At number 10, it all started with an incredible launch party, which was recreated by the super talented Amy Nolan in this drawing. At number 9 was the mind-blowing support that came from the freelance communities on social media, especially the love on Twitter and LinkedIn. 8, Freelance Magazine and myself were the first ever guests on Louise Shanahan's 15-minute freelancer podcast. 7, because the party got us off to such a good start, the Kickstarter algorithm picked us up and we were featured on the Kickstarter homepage and given Kickstarter Project We Love status. 6, top-tastic copywriter and best-selling author Andrew Bolton wrote a surprise campaign for the mag. 5, the coolest magazine shops we could have hoped for got on board as our first retailers, Mag Culture in London and Magazine in Brighton. 4, 13 days in, we broke 10K and we gave away 10 very special mugs. 3, Motion Nutrition were our very first four-year advertisers, and we ended up with over 30 advertising partners on board, including this super special advertising partner that you might recognise. Number 2. So we hit our Kickstarter goal 2 weeks and 1 day into the campaign, and then we set a stretch target. And number 1 was amazing freelance copywriter and friend of the magazine, Ed Callow, wrote a letter to Lauren Laverne about the magazine and about the Kickstarter, and he got us a headline feature on the BBC Radio 6 breakfast show. So we finished on 150% of our target. Our goal was £12,750, and we ended on £18,000 with a few offline backers as well. And we sold 1,000 copies of the magazine up front, and all the advertising space for issues 1 and 2. So finally, onto the business of actually making and marketing the magazine. So I was determined not to lose the momentum that we'd built up, and I didn't want this to be a Kickstarter where the product arrived months or years later. So the Kickstarter ended on April the 1st, and I wanted to make the mag land on people's doorsteps in April, and it did on April the 28th. And the response was unbelievable. We had hundreds of posts like this across Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. And we'd managed to get it out in that time frame because I'd had a good grip on our costs and relationships with suppliers already in place. And we had a really good idea what the product was going to look like. I had all my feature ideas and interviewees lined up. We had the logo and the front cover as voted for. We'd already written and designed a few articles to show on the Kickstarter, and Ange and I kept making the first issue in the background as the Kickstarter went from strength to strength. I'm laughing because I know what slide's coming. My best advice for you, if you want to be good at something, anything, and you know, this could be running, or it could be launching a business, or it could be writing an email newsletter, is be a fan of it. So I became a mag fan. I'm going to do the impression. This is another slide for the OGs, the UK-based OGs. I have to do the impression. I should leave the impressions to Dave Holland, but I'm going to go for it. Mag fan. Sorry if no, if some people don't get that, but this has got to be the best slide of the whole deck. Okay, anyway, so I took inspiration from the best, from the bits I liked best from other magazines, Rolling Rats Throw Me. And we worked out how we could make our own version of them. So look in unusual places, look at people doing it best, even if they're not in your industry. Especially if they're not in your industry. So I find children's magazines particularly inspiring. I find them really engaging, really eye-catching. They really make you feel like you're part of a club when you receive them from through the post. And I wanted to give people that feeling of being in a club that most of us probably haven't had since we were kids. And Ange and I had worked on magazines together for 3 years before. So we had our process pretty much nailed. So we work across a live Google Sheet. The fact that it's a live document and that I keep it bang up to date when we're at the height of production. And I think that's key. So I just wanted to very quickly share the process that we follow. So we have an issue theme. I come up with the new feature ideas around the theme. And I slot in our regular features and work out how they'll work with the theme. We then work out the first draft pagination for the articles and ads. Then I research and approach people to be featured, our featurees, as I've written there. I don't think that's a technical industry term. I do the interviews, I write up the interviews and put the articles through Grammarly, which is a key time saver. I then send Ange all the copy and images, and Ange designs the spreads and sends the proofs back to me. I give amends if needed. Ange pulls the whole magazine together. And then we spend half a day together going through final amends, and then we send it to print, aka squeaky bum time. So the other fact that is key to our success and our swiftness is that Ange is an insanely brilliant magazine designer. So we joke and I call her Ange No Amends Lions because there's so few design amends. And you'll know if you've seen the magazine that she's incredible at design, and I just let her get on with it because, you know, if you're working with an expert, just stay out of their way, basically. Okay, so onto our business model. So in my humble opinion, there's a lot of talk about print dying because everything's online now. And I don't believe that all print is dying because people are moving to digital. I believe that a lot of print is dying because they became more concerned about advertising revenue than the reader. And because they thought that the best way to grow advertising revenue was to increase circulation. And some people thought the best way to do that and the easiest way to do that was to give it out for free. But a lot of free copies distributed aren't read, and no readers means the ads stop working, which means no ad spend, and no money means no mag. So our business model is based on four pillars. So one is paid for. So all copies are paid for, meaning they're much more likely to be read. We don't give out free copies or do any offers, so not to devalue the brand. And the digital version is the same price as the print version. So two is recurring payments. So we committed to making it quarterly from the beginning, which meant that people could subscribe if they wanted to. So whether you're sending people a product, if you're getting them to an event, you're providing people with a service, present to them what they could purchase or get involved with the next time while you still have their attention. Because if you don't commit to creating the next thing for them, how do you expect them to commit to you? And otherwise, you're selling and marketing almost from a standing start every single time. So where I said we don't have any offers, we do have one, and there's an incentive to subscribe. So it's £10 an issue if you subscribe, or it's £12 if you buy an individual copy. But what I would also say is that you can cancel really easily at any time. Three is direct sales. So we have a few small retailers, but our priority is selling direct so that we have better relationships with our customers and also better profit margins. And then four is audience first. So audience first, then advertisers. So our number one focus is a happy, engaged community. That's like the absolute crux of our business. And also we know that that is what will be more appealing to advertisers. So finally, onto our marketing channels. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about our marketing. For me, marketing is more about what you do and how you do it than the channel you use. The channel is just a vehicle for telling people about the cool stuff you're doing. So with that in mind, our absolute number one marketing priority is making a brilliant product, so the best magazine that we possibly can. And the majority of the budget goes into making the magazine. We invest a little bit more in it each time, and then I'll spend the rest on promoting it. So since the Kickstarter, most of our sales have come from word of mouth, from people recommending the magazine on social media. And word of mouth marketing comes from having a great product or service by giving that product talkability and shareability value. And because we're lucky enough to get to feature so many awesome freelancers and be part of the freelance community, lots of people do shout about the magazine. The cover is actually really important to us for our shareability value. And it goes back to what I said before about first impressions really counting. So we've got really big plans for our issue 3 and 4 cover designs. And we have to have big plans because it'll be hard to beat how shareable we made the last cover for our community edition. So I asked readers if they wanted to submit their pictures, and we got over 100 responses. So we had over 100 cover stars. And, you know, many of them were more than happy to tell their networks that they were on the cover of Freelancer magazine when they received it. But even before that, we created a buzz about it because we decided to reveal the cover early. Even before that, we revealed a behind the scenes to Ange making it. And even before that, we got value from the ideas. I announced on social media that we were going to be looking for cover stars via our next email. So that gained us loads of new subscribers. And that email had an 80% open rate. So we have over 1,200 email subscribers now, and I think very carefully about what emails I send and how frequently. So I really respect that email list, and I'll only email when we've got something to say, and our emails typically get a 60 to 70% open rate at the moment. So I've thought a lot about what our emails will look like going forwards and what will be most desirable for the people reading them and how they will work along the magazine, alongside the magazine content. So we're currently investing in and designing and coding a special, it's an exclusive, special monthly business and marketing, like business and creativity inspiration newsletter for freelancers called The Dunker. So this is the first ever sneak peek at it. Designed by Ange, of course. So yeah, that'll be coming soon. So as we're only 6 months in, we're a very small team. We have to be very focused with our marketing channels. And that focus at the moment is currently organic and content led. So currently we use LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, email, and SEO. We have a new team member starting next week when we're going to expand our plans for those channels. And also we're going to start with Facebook. The reason being that we want to start to connect with freelancers who might not already be proactive on LinkedIn and Twitter, and also because over 50% of freelancers are 45 to 65. So of course, choose the channels that your audience uses, but your consistency and commitment are more important regardless of the channel. So do not spread yourself too thin. Work out how each channel fits into your overall strategy and the reason you're using each, and ditch any channels that you're not committed to. So a good move for our SEO was when I realized that we didn't have any Google reviews, and we could probably do with some. And I asked our readers if they'd leave us one, but I wanted to give people a little extra incentive to get around to doing it. So everyone who left us a review was posted a Freelancer magazine sticker. And within a couple of days, we had 60 five-star Google reviews. We've got a few more now. LinkedIn is our main traffic driver and revenue driver. And I just think the opportunity on LinkedIn is huge at the moment. If you post regularly as a person, not a brand, you know, it's the place that people are expecting turning up to do business. And I think because we're B2B, that works really well for us. And then lastly, I just want to break social media down as I see it into its simplest terms. So help and engage the community, build your audience, and when you sell. I think David Hyatt made this point, like, you don't want to be doing too much selling, maybe 80-20, but don't make any bones about it when you do, and don't try and disguise or shoehorn selling into other posts. That's it from me. Apart from for this talk, first I need to give an extra special thank you to Kevin, who helped me so much with my preparation. This was literally a meme has never resonated more with me than this one did on Friday. So this was this on Friday. And if you didn't like it, you can blame Kevin as well. No. Kevin is such a legend that I'm not even the first person that he's helped this much. Because he helps so many people, so much so that our other friend Joe has a dedicated page on his website to him. So yeah, I just wanted to share that. I was like, well, I can't do better than that, really. So I just thought I'd share this. Joe's website's pretty cool as well. So thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you all for coming along today. Thank you, Joe, and the Marketing Meetup for having me, and to everyone who's supported me and the magazine in any way at all and sent me messages of support for this talk. I just want to say, I don't know how the hell you launch a startup without an incredible army of people behind you. And basically, I don't want ever want to find out. So thank you so, so, so much. It makes your eyes go a bit funny, this one, doesn't it? I was thinking it'd be cool if it had like a magic eye of Joe Glover's face. Maybe for the next magazine. I've gone very old school today, haven't I?
No one needs to see my face more than like they need to see my face. So.
Who wants a magic eye of Joe's face in the next magazine? next magazine.
Sophie, that was so good. You'll be able to see the chat feature blowing up right now with the world's most lovely people. And by the way, the chat feature today, like, has been full of so much love for you. And like, you may have seen it coming ticking through, but like, a big thank you to everyone watching in as well this morning. Cause I always think that there's two tracks here, and Sophie, you absolutely smashed that talk. And then everyone watching in today has also bought just the love. It's been like the most positive experience, and that's an absolute embodiment of you as a person as well, and everything that you've brought to this chat. So thank you for the effort, you know, thank you for sharing, thank you for your honesty, thank you for your thoughtfulness. Honestly, amazing.
Thank you to everyone else. Literally, I'm just like a vehicle for everyone else's like love and support and everything. So yeah, thank you so much, everyone else.
Isn't that the best way? Isn't that the absolute best way? There is a comment here that I just want to highlight from Charles, who says, it's amazing how even though I have nothing to do with the idea or the creation of the magazine, I feel so utterly proud of it and what Sophie has created, not just a print mag, but an amazing community of super people. And I think that pretty much sums it up. So awesome. Let's take some questions, Sophie. We've got about 9 minutes left, and we've got 8 open questions right now. So let's get to them nice and quick. And actually, quite fittingly, the top question comes from the aforementioned Kevin. Thank you, Kevin.
Is it why did you make me watch this presentation so many times?
It's not actually. I'll tell you what it is. It says, Kevin says, I love the Freelancer magazine, Sophie. And his question is, what has been the biggest hurdle that you've had to overcome while working on the magazine, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, tough question. Could have prepped me for that.
You had like loads of conversations. So.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't know. Really, you've just got to keep going, you know, and I think creating a business that is fun and that you love is the best way to do that. So I think just, you know, if you're going to set something up and it's going to be yours, then you might as well make it as fun as possible. But you know, we have had Practically, there's been issues. We are now on our third print and distributors. So the first guys were really good, but they were really expensive. The second guys were a lot cheaper. And then, you know the rest of that story. recently we've had loads of mags not turning up in the post, which is just like waking up every day to like people going, oh, it hasn't arrived. And that's a little bit maybe to do with Royal Mail as well at the moment, or like the delay. Practically it's stuff like that. That's probably been the biggest practical challenge. Mm-hmm. I'd say. But do you know what I'd say? People have just been amazing. Like everyone's just been like, it's fine, don't worry about it, you know. It's been incredible.
Well, I think that probably speaks to the way that you've set it up as well, though, which is that sort of community spirit and folks coming together to sort of almost co-create it in a way, you know, that like they almost know you, so like they know that you'll do what you can to help them over the course of time. So even if stuff goes wrong, it's like, yeah, you know what, it'll arrive, you know, and it's cool. It's not like a faceless organization, right?
I will literally hand deliver it if you don't get it. So I think it's just because we're lucky as well that freelancers are just like the most incredible people ever. So like, yeah, that's my other advice. If you're going to set up a business, choose freelancers as your target audience.
I love it. I think it's a really, really good point. And there's a message in the chat feature from Alex who said, but you dealt with that delivery issue like a pro and a friend, 10 out of 10. So speaks volumes. So next question comes from Simon. And this is a really, really good one, actually. And Simon says, when you were building the financial model, how did you come up with a guesstimate for subscriber numbers, as in, you know, like the figure that you were aiming towards and budgeted towards?
Again, it was really tough, and you know, I really couldn't get past, you know, when I first came up with an idea for the Kickstarter, I was like, I can't, like, go, you just pluck a number out of your head and you're like, I can't possibly go for more than 6k, you know, I can't possibly do this, I can't possibly charge more than like £8 for a magazine, that would be ludicrous. And like over time and just thinking about it, you know, you just have to spend some time on it thinking, actually, you know, let's think about all these costs. And even still, things have cost a lot more, not a lot more, but you know, there's more costs associated with starting a business than obviously you would anticipate. And we try and invest back into the business at the moment, right? So we're like building the email newsletter and things like that. But I think just spending time on it, and actually for me, the most powerful thing was when I started working out the worst case scenario. So I was like, okay, well, what's the worst that can possibly happen here? I think, yeah, just spending time on it and just writing down as many costs as you can. And like, if you're budgeting, working out like what the minimum is that you need to make. But I've set up so many businesses where I've given people the advice over the years and I just haven't done it. And the thing that was great for me was that Kickstarter forced me to do that. And it was just, it's just been, yeah, so much better. Who knew setting up a business with some figures and some forecasts and budgets?
It's funny though, isn't it? I mean, you spot on with the advice thing that, you know, we probably hear, I imagine, over the course of, you know, the past year and a half that we've been doing this webinars, we've probably heard every bit of advice on doing marketing ever, you know, that, you know, I've certainly been here for them all, but I know that a bunch of folks watching would have been as well, you know. And if you took all the advice given in those things, you probably would have the perfect business, but sometimes it's just hard to implement it. So
that's the best advice, really, isn't it? Like, just do it. Like, you know, it's almost like getting started and writing an essay or anything. Like, you just kind of have to start and, you know, go through it with someone else, explain it to someone else, even just to kind of say it out loud.
That's it. The Kickstarter dynamic is really interesting as well, because you had a target and it was something to speak about in itself, wasn't it? You know, all nearly there, you know, almost to that 12K, you know, and people wanted to edge you along. Would you do it again? Would you launch a business with Kickstarter? Would you go for a second round of funding and stuff like that? Or do you feel like it was useful at the time, but it's a different mechanism that's not useful in all circumstances?
Because I'd say like I hadn't really had any experience with Kickstarter apart from backing a couple of projects, but I just knew that was the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. I knew that was, and I would say I'm so pro Kickstarter now. Like, if I wasn't for it, I actually felt the functionality was really good, because I'm quite gung-ho. Like, I'm quite like, I'm just going to do it and I'm not going to work, you know, I don't know what functionality it actually has. And then sometimes something would come up and I'd be like, oh my God, I don't know if I can change the rewards now, because I've, you know, and actually all the functionality was there. But yeah, I just thought it was a really excellent way. And I would definitely do it again. Like, I'm not sure what, you know, I'm hoping that we can grow the business kind of directly now, but 100% if we needed to, then I would use Kickstarter again, or I would use it for other products, and I would totally recommend it.
Nice. That's really interesting. I don't think it's anything that anyone's mentioned in any previous talk. So, you know, it's really interesting to hear that experience. Mm. Cool. Let's take the next one from Claire. So Claire asks, and another thing that I don't think we've really had many people mention was Twitch. So Claire speaks about, why did you choose Twitch to stream the launch party? Claire says that she actually streams on Twitch for a personal hobby, but had never thought to use it as a professional usage. So, you know, what was your experience like there?
So it was kind of like what I talked about, like kind of with that positivity and energy. And to be honest, we knew the first issue was going to be themed creativity, and I just started thinking about who the coolest, most creative people I kind of knew were. And so I asked my friend Dom, who's a DJ, if he would be interviewed, and he had moved his streaming onto Twitch. And I think, you know, because he, in real life DJing during the pandemic, and I think because he felt like my energy, even though it was like 2 weeks after I'd come up with the idea, he was like, we should have a party, like we should host it on Twitch. So it was his idea. And it just made so much sense at the time as well. And I don't use Twitch that much myself, like I do now a bit more Twitch DJs, but I just feel like there's a huge opportunity there. Like, if you think about the way that, you know, people consume content, like going from kind of like reading blogs to podcasts to watching videos live, you know, whether you're, you know, DJing or playing a video game or like making something, I think there's a huge opportunity with Twitch. And obviously, yeah, it's great as well, because the budget was like, it cost us way less, so there wasn't as much risk there, which like remove as much risk as you can basically. Yeah, so I think it's great, but yeah, I don't know loads about Twitch at the moment.
No, cool. I think this will probably be the last question, and it comes from Heather. And I think every marketer on this call will probably relate to this feeling, but I think it's the best question to sort of finish on as well. So Heather says, firstly, huge congratulations on what you've achieved. It's absolutely brilliant. Heather has many questions, but they absolutely love print. And so what was the biggest surprise / challenge of producing content for print? And most importantly, this is the feeling that I'm sure loads of people know, how did it feel when the magazine arrived back from the printers and you got the smell of the ink straight off the press?
So many people just talk about the smell of the magazine, which is so nice. So many questions. Do you know what I suppose the biggest surprise to me was like how easy it was, you know, like Ange and I were putting together the magazine and we were like, no one else had really seen it, like apart from my husband and stuff, and we were like, we think it looks good, but like maybe it doesn't look good, and you know, so yeah, it just felt really right. You know, I just think about it, right, we're just packaging something up in a better way, really, and delivering, you know, we're taking people's stories and we're just packaging it up in a different way, which is kind of marketing, right? So yeah, that was great. And the feeling was unbelievable, but I tell you, which will probably make you laugh, I didn't get the magazine before anyone else. So really? I didn't see it. Cause I was so keen for it to get out, and like, it would just add so much to the production time. I was like, what is the point of me sitting here on my own? So I don't see the magazine. So the first I found out, I was actually on a call with Penny Brazier, really, really hungover. And I got off the call and like Twitter had blown up. And I was like, oh my God. And I was at with my dad and my stepmom, and my stepmom was like, the magazine's arrived. And I thought she was looking at social media. So I was like, I know. And she was like, no, it's arrived. And I was like, oh my God, it's arrived. So I was really happy that it arrived as well, like, because I might have not even got it in the post that day when other people had. But yeah, it was just like in insane. Like, can't describe it.
That's so amazing. As I say, I'm sure there's a lot of folks who can relate to the experience. I personally have jumped around the room holding a leaflet before, you know, with pride. But, you know, I can only imagine that that was multiplied many times by the effort that you've put in, Sophie. And like, I think Claire sums it up nicely there with a nice chat comment, who just says, an excellent choice of guest, because Sophie, you've been phenomenal, truly phenomenal. So thank you for being you. Thank you for the effort that you've clearly put in on behalf of yourself, but also the freelancer community. And just a really, really wonderful job. So thank you very much for today.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Joe.
No worries, no problem at all. And
can't wait to see the chat. And if anyone's got questions, then just hit me up on LinkedIn or Twitter or anything.
So, wicked. Yeah. I'll link your profiles in the follow-up email, which will go out in 12 minutes time. So it will be with you right there. So okay. Thank you, everyone. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you, Sophie, once again. Please do take the time to thank the sponsors. That would be an amazing thing on the part of the Marketing Meetup. They are human beings behind all the brands. It means we can carry on bringing these sessions to you. And what a great way to start the day. So hope you're all right. Hope that this carries you through for the rest of the day. And thanks again, Sophie. And see you all next Tuesday. Take care.